This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate. Then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
From WNYC in New York, this is On the Media. I'm Brooke Gladstone. Those of you of a certain age and disposition may be right now sitting on the floor of your childhood bedroom, or crouched in the family attic, or going through boxes of junk in your parents' basement. I mean, if not Thanksgiving weekend, then when? And if you are doing that, have you come across any cassette tapes? You know, dusty little plastic cases with unspooled tape in a giant brown tangle? Have they cast your mind back to painstakingly compiled mixtapes expressing your old dreams and demons way back when? Radiolab reporter Simon Adler has spent the last year listening to, thinking about, and researching the cassette tape. And what he concluded was that this object, this little piece of plastic, changed the world. It brought down governments, collapsed space and time, remade how we share information. Over five episodes, Simon and the Radiolab team take us to China, Vietnam, South Sudan, Czechoslovakia, and 1940s America, exploring this object's impact and how, yes, even now, we're still living in a cassette world. This week's show is one of those episodes, and it begins with another Simon.
So, I am indeed Simon Goodwin. I've been inventing gadgets and writing computer software since the late 1970s.
Back then, most people had no experience with computers.
Yeah, people understood computers as being, quote, giant electronic brains
right. That
couldn't be argued with.
They were just big government-owned math machines. And so Simon, he could really only share his passion for these things with a small group of oddballs like him, which he did on this local independent radio show he worked at.
Good evening and welcome to Radio Wyvern Computer Club.
It was a weekly magazine-style show broadcast in West Central England.
I'm Robbie Arnold, and with me tonight, Simon Goodwin.
This week, I'll be explaining what sorts of steps make up machine code.
Heard by, I don't know, maybe a couple hundred people.
We did things like, which computer should I buy?
Potentially, the Commodore 64 is the best machine on the market, although it's very economically priced.
The answer to which should be one that hasn't been made yet. And what does the jargon mean?
For no sensible reason, the contents of every memory location is called a byte.
And then also,
well, this week we've had three new titles in.
Lots and lots of computer game reviews.
One of those for the Commodore 64 called Everest.
Righto.
And while for Simon this was fun and all, it seemed small.
I mean, I'd already been deeply, deeply moved and had my life changed by these obscure computers. And I knew that home computing, it's not about shooting games or driving racing games. It's about sharing.
Huh. And how did you know that?
Well, I used to ride my Vespa motor scooter to a pub where there was a computer club. We'd bring along the software that we'd written ourselves, we'd show people, and they'd usually be, can I have a copy of that? Can I have a copy of that? And you'd swap.
And when you did that, you weren't just handing them a program.
You'd be swapping inspiration and ideas too.
And so, really before most, he saw the future filled with these computers.
Oh yeah, I believed they were going to change the world.
I mean, way back in 1983, he was already imagining open source software, file sharing, a world where ideas and information would be shared across borders and between people frictionlessly.
And so it was pretty obvious that we needed to do something innovative.
Right. Now if you press enter.
Obvious to me anyway.
And that's it, Mike. Not very exciting really, is it?
And one day...
I had an abnormal idea.
That using nothing more than a simple cassette tape, he could create the internet. Or at least, an internet.
Of freely downloadable software.
To explain.
All of the early computers, certainly this side of the Atlantic, even the Apples, used cassettes.
Strange as this may sound, before there were flash drives or floppy disks, there were these data cassettes. I've actually got a couple of them with me right here. This is Finance One for 1979 Apple computers. This one's Arcade Classics for the Commodore 64. And I mean, these were the exact same cassettes you'd use to play music on your stereo. But instead of music...
The cassette plays two different tones, a bit like Morse code. So what I'll show you now is, this is the original 1982 model of the Spectrum.
Sitting in his office over Zoom, he actually isolated these tones and played them for me.
Please, please. Here we go. A deep note for a one, and a note an octave higher for a zero.
And so to load a program, you'd literally play those tones into your computer off a cassette. The computer would listen to those tones flying by super duper fast, convert each of them into a zero or a one, and then display whatever you're running on your screen.
Roughly speaking, that's exactly right.
And so Simon thought...
I mean, the synergy with radio was obvious, because that miracle...
Since this software is sound, we could use our little radio show to broadcast it.
And not only that, I mean, we were already using our cassette recorder to record hit records off the radio...
So people could tape the radio broadcast
onto a cassette,
have their own copy,
and then play it into their home computers.
And so one evening in December 1983, Simon wrote up a small bit of software to share with anyone who was listening.
Simon, will this load on the 16 and the 48?
Should load on both machines.
Well, let's hope he does. Well, get your tape recorders out. Load your tape, first of all.
Inside the radio station, Simon and his co-host walked people through what was about to happen, prepared them to hit record, and across the broadcast region...
There's a lot of people around here poised with their fingers already over the recording buttons as it is now.
Okay, Stuart.
People were ready and waiting.
Stand by for blasting, because here it comes. And it loads in 3, 2, 1... And there it was.
It worked.
Across the county, dozens of people had captured these mysterious tones onto a cassette, played that cassette into their computer, and then on their screen.
First, they would see the pixels arrive on the screen, and then as the tones changed timbre, they would see something that I thought looked a bit like a reindeer.
It was a little Rudolph animation.
He's wagging his leg or something along those lines. Of course, you couldn't tell his nose was red. The graphics were black and white.
Okay, and why Rudolph?
It was Christmas.
It was... Okay.
Well, that's your present from the Radio Wyvern Computer Club for this evening. Lots and lots of programs, and many thanks to everyone that sent in, to Dave and Ian and Adrian. Also to Simon and...
Okay, so Simon's reindeer was sort of hilariously rudimentary. Simon had managed to send an animation across space to hundreds of people instantaneously. I mean, at that time, the only way to send someone a bit of text was telegram or letter, and the only way to share a picture or a song was by actually going over to someone's house and handing them the physical photograph or cassette. And well, back then, yes, you could record something onto a cassette tape. Making a copy of that tape was a technological feat beyond the grasp of all but a few people. Until, that is, along came a guy by the name of Lord Sugar.
I'm sick of looking at you at the moment. Get out that door. You're fired.
who currently is actually the host of the UK's version of The Apprentice.
He plays the sort of the boss okay. character.
Was he knighted? And is that why he gets to call himself Lord Sugar?
Yeah, because he built up an electronics industry just at exactly the time when that was the place to be.
In 1984, he released this dual deck cassette recorder.
These machines that would allow you to record from one cassette tape to another cassette tape.
This is legal academic Daniela Simone. She's an expert on UK copyright law who remembers this twin deck cassette player.
It was a truly revolutionary technology of distribution. And a very fond memory of my youth.
So did you have one of these growing up?
No. The people that had that at school were really, like, just the coolest, really. I wasn't, you can tell, having become an academic, I was not one of the coolest kids.
Oh, I was willing to give you the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, probably. I've just given myself away then.
But Daniela says she does remember going over to her friend's house that did have one.
Some twins, Catherine and Timothy.
Of course they have the dual deck cassette player. Of course the twins have the twin cassette recorder.
Exactly.
And copying these tapes with her friends, she says, was crazily empowering.
Like magic, you know? Because before this, record companies were able to control the way in which you would access what they were selling.
Like you couldn't make a playlist. You couldn't even just buy the songs you wanted.
You had to buy the entire album. And so the idea that you could have your own compilation that you made and you could have songs in any order you wanted, it's like a sort of a superpower this technology was giving you.
And this superpower, wielded by millions of kids in their bedrooms, was beginning to threaten the music industry.
Home taping is killing music.
We are losing £20 million a year.
I mean, there was this great degree of panic.
The flood of illegally produced albums and tapes.
Half the country's teenagers tape music.
These people are organized crime. I mean, we must know.
And I mean, this panic even had Simon Goodwin nodding along.
Probably for good commercial reasons.
By this point, he was making and selling cassette-based computer games.
It was a side revenue stream, but the particular one that was a hit was a Exploring Underground game called Goldmine.
You'd play as this little stick figure burrowing down into the ground
with a pickaxe, and they would start exploring the space, trying to avoid getting crushed.
Anyhow, Simon had spent dozens, if not hundreds of hours working on this thing, and so with all this pirating going on,
I spent as much time on the copy protection as I did on the game.
Using a bit of computer magic, he slipped some code into the program that would detect if the cassette was a duplicate, and if so, it wouldn't play. I'm hearing a slight tension, though, because on the one hand, Simon, you love the sharing with your compatriots. But on the other hand, you're trying to lock that thing down so that it can't be used to its full extent, potentially. So how did you square those two in your mind?
I was being paid. I was being paid for the commercial software, whereas for the radio program, I won't ask whether you're getting paid, but radio is not a way of making a living.
Touché, Simon. Touché.
Let's get this quite clear. A pirate is a thief. The only investment he has is a piece of tape. And he is making
money. And this was the tension. Out of everybody. Once money got involved, for people like Simon, the people making stuff, sharing effectively became stealing. However, across the Iron Curtain, questions like who's the pirate and who's being harmed were even harder to answer. In fact, the whole situation was playing out in this fascinating, almost upside-down kind of way.
Coming up, Simon meets an unlikely pirate who explains how cassette tapes changed lives behind the Iron Curtain. This is On the Media.